From True Africa, I'm Claude Winitsky, and this is Limitless.
As a lot of these content hubs now come to us, you have Netflix here, Amazon Prime, and so forth. There will be a need for them to create content that has African music. That can be a very good royalty check that can sustain you. If not now, in the next 5 years, we'll start to see more sustainability locally and all over the continent because we are slowly becoming the content hub of the world.
Welcome to Limitless, the podcast that asks the questions that matter for Africa. We're looking for African solutions to African problems. The Limitless podcast is supported by the U.S. Department of State and the Seen Fire Foundation. We're all about promoting new talent on Limitless Africa, and that's why I'm so excited to invite Meli Klanze and Sizo Chope on this podcast for this extended interview. Meli and Sizo are part of the team behind Antidote Music. It's an independent record label and music consultancy company based in Eswatini. That's a small country of a little more than a million people tucked between South Africa and Mozambique. Antidote Music has been in business since 2012. It's now one of the most established labels in the country. They're behind some amazing artists and fresh sounds, with a focus on Eswatini electronic music. What I admire so much about Sizo and Meli is the fact that they're such self-starters. They still have day jobs on top of running Antidote Music, but they've still managed to achieve a hell of a lot in a decade and in a small country that didn't have an established music industry until they started building one. And they did all that in a decade that has also seen some of the greatest shifts in music and how it's distributed. I'm talking about the internet, or rather, the lack of internet in the 2010s in Eswatini. But it's also been a decade of new genres and offshoots of Afro House. I was fascinated when Meli explained the emergence of Amapiano and its political significance. Music from Nigeria and South Africa is taking over the mainstream. You can't deny it. But what about the other rich cultural influences on the continent? In this episode, I wanted to celebrate those who are laying the groundwork in challenging circumstances and fighting to get their sound heard. And I am so grateful for their honesty and insight. Sizo and Meli are at the coalface of a challenging industry. An industry that's constantly changing, but whose potential is really, well, you know what I'm going to say, limitless. Meli and Sizo, welcome to Limitless Africa. We wanted to get started with you. Can you tell us about yourselves, your background, and really how you grew up and where you grew up?
Thank you. Thank you very much for having us on the podcast. So I'll start with myself. My name is Meli Klanze. I'm born and raised in Eswatini. Grew up mostly in the capital city, Mbabane. So that's more or less where I got to learn life, going to school, make friends. I got the opportunity to move to South Africa to further my studies and lived in Joburg for about 7 years. Studying at university in Joburg, and I'd say that's where the culture bug bit me. Being in that melting pot in Johannesburg, being exposed to music, entertainment, culture at another level, you know, in as much as coming from Eswatini, a very culturally rich country, the beauty of Joburg is now experiencing the diversity, and it blows one's mind. And from there, I would say that's where Antidote Music was birthed. But let me not go too far in and let Sizo patch in.
Yeah, let's save Antidote Music for later because we're going to be talking about it at length. But Eswatini, people don't talk about it so much. Can you tell us a little bit about your country? You said it's really small, it's monocultural, but give us more of a sense of what it's like culturally.
So it's a kingdom, first and foremost. So we have a king, and a lot of our culture is, I guess, preserved through the cultural ceremonies that happen throughout the year. But it's a very culturally orientated country, but very, like you said, mono. So we speak either English or Siswati, which is the main language. But what can I say? Things are very simple, but maybe let me give Sizo to chip in there.
Yeah, Sizo, kind of really, please chip in.
Yeah, you do find pockets of other cultures within the country where you find people, you know, from Rwanda and other African countries gathering together, doing cookouts and, you know, having like they are preserving their own cultures within the country. But then, of course, Siswati or being a Swazi is the dominant culture in the country. And we pride ourselves as a one language and one culture country.
Tell us about Antidote Music now. How did that come about? We really want to hear about the genesis and the spark, because I remember in 2016, which was 8 years ago, you were already writing about Antidote Music for our website, True Africa. So we go way back, almost 8-9 years in this. So tell us about the beginning and how it's evolved since 2016.
Let me start by introducing myself. So my name is Sizo Hlophe. I grew up in a small town called Mangayane, and I had my father worked in Mbabane, which is the capital, and my mother worked in Mangayane in a government hospital. And then, of course, after high school, I moved to Joburg with Melly. And in Joburg, that's where we kind of met. A year before that, I had done an event in the country that was kind of big within students that were in the diaspora. And when we met with Melly, he was a DJ, and we're like, hey, we're a small community of people who are doing something in the culture space. But at the time, it was for Melly, he was a DJ and a producer. And on my end, I had done just one event. And actually, it was Antidote, the house movement. And the house movement, because this was a dominant sound within young people, which still is actually even today.
But why Antidote? An antidote to what?
An antidote. So I don't know. I think I was just fascinated with the idea of it being the answer, you know? Yeah. We were just looking for a fancy way of saying the answer. And I think we didn't know, you know, just the power of naming things and speaking things. We didn't know that actually that's exactly what it had to be and what it's become. The answer for so many of the shortcomings, especially in our home country. But just to add context to what Sizo was saying there, this was around 2010. So Sizo and I are in Joburg doing first year university at a time where Africa is hosting its first ever FIFA World Cup. The energy around that time was amazing. And like Sizo said, at the time, I was a DJ playing a lot of campus parties, playing a lot of music, and Sizo was more on events, but also production. But what we realized is that because of the platform or the stage that we had gotten to, we started getting a lot of young underground producers who would give us music to play or to help promote. Mind you, like I said, this is 2010. So at this time, the best way to get your music out was to get a record deal. I mean, yes, the internet was there, and yes, digital music was there, but it was just very much within its infancy, especially within the context of Southern Africa.
Yeah, but so I want to say social media was taking off. I remember you even writing about that in True Africa at the time.
Yeah.
That social media was really rising exponentially at the time.
Social media, specifically Facebook, that was the main plug at the time, in terms of if you wanted to get your music out. And at the time, you know, file sharing was the way. And that's how we used to get the music and we used to play the music. But I think over time, I think it just hit us that, you know, with all this music that we're getting from all these underground producers that were meeting at a lot of these underground parties and places, why don't we start a label? And I think that's when we Googled it for the first time, how to start and run a label, which would then become Antidote Music. So that's when we started the record label.
Cesar, why don't you tell us a little bit about what it's like to run a record label in Eswatini?
It came with its own challenges. At the time, the internet was very scarce, and each time we would do a release, it would be best if we were in university in Johannesburg because we had free internet. But then when you come into Eswatini, you needed to use an internet cafe. And then after that, running the record label, the biggest challenge has been talent. The talent was there, but it wasn't at the level at which we were exposed in South Africa. So most of our work, we found ourselves where we do more of acceleration, we do more of boot camping, and we kind of capacitate the musicians that we work with. So in a way, even the work that we still do today, it revolves around that, because we find ourselves as a country having less music put out on the internet in a year than anywhere in other countries. So to us, that doesn't really work best as a business. But of course, we have to do with what we have.
Anything to add to that, Melly? Anything to, yeah?
Yeah, just to add to what Cesar was saying there, just the challenges of our industry not being as commercialized as the South African industry. Running a record label, we had so many challenges of like resources. I mean, we're recording this right now in a studio that we built about like what, 8 months ago. But for the longest time, we've had to operate from like bedroom studio, set up like makeshift facilities for the artists that we discovered to be able to record music. Fortunately, we have a very good engineering team that mixes and masters it to a level that's acceptable. But if you see some of the places where we record the music, especially at the beginning parts, it was crazy how we were doing it, really. And I think for me as well, one other challenge is just the amount of influence that South Africa has on the region. It's very hard to be original or authentic because of, South Africa.
No, but I would even say, let me interrupt, but I would even say on the world. I mean, we all saw at the Grammy Awards how Tyla was able to win the Grammy, and she won over Burna Boy and other people. So Nigeria was the dominant force, but now South Africa is coming back. So I'm really interested in what you have to say about that specific angle.
Yeah, I mean, South Africa's always had the advantage of a lot of their industries commercialized quicker than many other African countries. So if I can say, they've always had the loudest voice. And I'd say Nigeria as well, but Nigeria more so because of their diaspora, because they have so many Nigerians all over the world. It's very easy then for their voice to be almost as loud as, if not even louder than South Africa. But with South Africa, it was purely because they had the machine. The media has always been on par. The investment going into the creative industries has almost been second to none if you compare with any other African country. So they've definitely, just specifically, if you now talk about Southern Africa, they've had the largest voice. We consume South Africa. So post their democracy, they've been setting the trend. I think that goes without saying. If we're talking media entertainment, Nigeria, which makes sense why they're always at loggerheads, because they are the two big powerhouses if we're talking media entertainment on the continent.
And this might sound a bit controversial, but also South Africa is a new country. You know, they just had their independence in 1994, which means most of the resources were there. They just had to take over these resources and making use of them. And now it's showing off. You know,
you mean like the infrastructure that was built in the apartheid years?
Yeah, it's always been there, the TV, the radio, and now it's in the right hands and they're really utilizing it.
And knowing that, what is your game plan for Eswatini?
Yeah, we've had to change our game plan so many times. I mean, at the beginning, our game plan was...
Tell me, that's a story of my life. Any entrepreneur has to change their game plan so many times, right? It's called pivoting.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had to pivot so many times. Like Sizo alluded to this earlier to say, initially, we wanted to run Antidote Music like a business, you know, and we wanted to be successful in the business, in the music business, right? And sure, in the context of our country, we were the first to put music on the internet in 2012. Before that, no one was. It was purely through CDs, cassettes, and the like. So we did that, but we soon discovered that there was no market. There was no market because people couldn't afford the internet, right? And at the same time, we didn't have the kind of money needed to develop the talent. So there is no major label currently operational in the country. So the likes of Universal, Sony, Warner, and the like, they operate in South Africa. So there are no machines that are pumping money into developing talent. And that's, I guess, was our biggest pivot when we realized that this really can't be a business. And we had to actually change it to a nonprofit and just make a conscious decision to say our work will just be based on development in the sector, giving artists the capacity, giving artists the access, giving artists the opportunity, and just being part of their story. Sure, if they make tons of money, that will be great. That's part of our legacy. But as a business, we kind of had to put the concept of that in the backseat until our industry is developed at a point whereby we can compete. And I think we are not so far from that. I mean, the amount of work that has been done, not only by us, but so many other organizations as well. Bushfire, for example, through the Bushfire Festival. I think it's really created a better ground for a young creative in Eswatini to be better than what they could have been 10 years ago. And I think, you know, Uncle Waffles is a good example of that. I know South Africa played a large part.
Give us a little bit of background on Uncle Waffles, because one of the things that I wanted to talk about, I mean, this is a 23-year-old DJ who's blowing up, but really Uncle Waffles is really associated with Amapiano. And when you were talking about your early days in Joburg, I was really thinking about the evolution from Kwaito to Amapiano, which is really what is putting South Africa on the map right now. You know, so I really stay with us and with our listeners and explaining what you think is happening there, because I think you're onto something.
Yeah, it's great that you mentioned Amapiano because for a lot of us in the region and who are on the ground at the time, it isn't a new phenomenon, you know. It's only taking the world by storm now, and I think it's a good time because the world is in need of just new things. But first time I came across Amapiano was around, I think, 2013. It was at a party. I think we were in Soweto. Yes, we were in Soweto. So you're very right. I think over and beyond Kwaito, for me, it's dance. And I'm not a South African, but I've lived in South Africa and I've seen it. And how I see it or how it went was in the early 90s, house music came to South Africa. And house music, that four to the floor, you know, that kind of beat, that sound, influenced a lot of what Kwaito became, you know? And ultimately, it's all dance music. It's all meant to make you dance. And I think that's why it's stuck with South Africa, because South Africa, and I think Africa as a whole, is a very dance-centric continent. Anything that has rhythm, anything that makes us dance is always going to win on the continent. So you had house music coming in, influencing Kwaito. And Kwaito came about because you had a lot of young people post now getting democracy. They had a lot to say, right? So they had to say it on beats. So it was like they're rapping, but they couldn't rap on rap beats. So they had a lot of these house instrumentals that they would slow down and rap over them. And that evolved into Kwaito, right? And then over time, Kwaito kind of died off. I wouldn't say died, but I guess the success came because a lot of the Kwaito songs were more like from a struggle, poverty perspective or trying to make it out of the hood. And there came a time where the success came. AKA and Casper are good milestones or indicators of that around the 2010 era when hip hop now started to blow up. And hip hop still is an expressive format, but it was now more we made it, all is good, we're out of the hood. And I think for a while that was the case, but Amapiano blew up because I think the youth of South Africa now had a lot to say because, and this is my opinion, a lot of them feel failed by the current ruling party, the ANC. And all over again, the youth had something to say, and Amapiano became that perfect vehicle because it carried a similar or carries a similar format to Kwaito in that it's slowed down beats that you can rap to, but because of they still have that house or dance music format, you can dance to. And now with like TikTok and just how content creation and the evolution of content, the dance challenges also became a catalyst for now, taking Amapiano outside of the borders of South Africa. And I think that's what we're seeing now. And other than Amapiano as well, there's also like other genres, like Bacardi, which I wouldn't say are offshoots of Amapiano, but to the untrained ear, you typically bundle them together. But over and above that, that house culture is still there and is taking off again through champions of it like Black Coffee, that Afro house sound again that's coming out of South Africa. And I'd say not even South Africa, just Africa as a whole as well, because Kenya's got a healthy Afro house scene as well. I don't know, maybe Sizo might want to add something there.
I mean, to me, COVID played a big role in terms of amplifying the voices of African sounds, I would say, because everyone at the time was glued on their computer, on their phone. Everyone needed access to the internet because they didn't want to be left out, because everyone was kind of closed off in their homes. So that was the perfect moment to get everyone as an audience. And I think Uncle Waffles came at the right time, just by the end of COVID. And that kind of worked in terms of having the audience physically and having the audience glued on their phones. And that dance that she did on those decks kind of, you know, it even Drake posted that. So yeah, that was the key moment. COVID was the key moment.
I'm thinking about what you're saying, and I'm trying to not compare, but draw similarities between the work that you're doing with Antidote and some of the Johannesburg labels that I've been following. I don't know, Kunye, other labels like that. You know, probably Kunye Records is a label that could be considered inspiring when you're thinking of exporting this Southern African music. What is the very differentiated nature of the productions that are coming out of Antidote that you would say make you different from these labels that are coming out of Joburg?
I mean, I think the key thing here is with electronic music in Southern Africa, it's, as Melly has alluded before, it's hugely influenced by South Africa. So everything that we consume is South Africa. And the biggest challenge that we face in Eswatini is we find a lot of young people now making the similar sounds. But then it's not that we discourage them. We allow them to keep crafting until we find something that is almost unique. For example, we have one of our artists, his name is Sooks, and he is standing out in South Africa, but the sound is almost similar. But as a Swazi, it's not, how can I put it? It's the Sooks sound is not everyone in Eswatini that is doing it. And it's not everyone in South Africa that is doing it similar to Sooks, but it fits within the sound aesthetics of South Africa.
I would say that for the longest time, our sound really hasn't differed that much. I think the wow effect that always came with Antidote Music is that we are the smallest country in the Southern African region. I think people were really shocked that there's music that could come across as South African or match up to South African music that was coming out of the small country. It was almost like the shock factor was the fact that we're almost punching above our weight. You wouldn't expect us to be making music as good as the South African music. And I think for the longest time, there was no distinction. But over time, also trying to pursue how could we stand out, we discovered that we do have a few things that are similar but different. Because the beauty of South Africa is the whole of Southern Africa. All of the languages that they speak in South Africa are spoken in almost all of the other Southern African countries. But in terms of the music, we don't have a lot of artists from South Africa singing or rapping or whatever the case in Siswati. So we started to see these few things to say, actually, let's start encouraging more of our artists to write music in their mother tongue instead of writing it in English and trying to, be accepted. I mean, the language is still spoken and understood in South Africa. So sing in Siswati, write in Siswati. And over and above that, also the use of like indigenous instruments, Makoyane, which as well is an indigenous instrument, a bowstring instrument that we share with South Africa, because ultimately we come from the mother tribe, the Nguni tribe. And these are bowstring instruments that are consistent through all the Nguni tribes. But I think over time that has been some of the things that we've encouraged them to say, listen, let's use our language. Let's use the indigenous sounds, because also over and above just being unique, it's almost like there's a preservation that needs to happen, because if we're not getting the younger artists to sample some of these sounds, then over time they might die down, they might fade away, and that would be a huge loss.
I want to go back to what you said earlier about your experience in Joburg. You know, I've been going to Joburg for close to 25 years, and I've noticed pretty much all the young people who are in the creative industries coming out of, I don't know, Lesotho or Botswana or even, Eswatini, they still continue to call you Swazis. They were very much considered to be part of the South Africa scene, and South Africa was clearly the center of gravity. So when you were telling me about your ambitions for Antidote as a business, I'm just trying to think of, how you think you can actually create a successful venture when you're so far, yet so close to the center of gravity that is the Johannesburg metropolis.
Yeah, I would say for the longest time, Joburg has been central to us. As much as we are based in Eswatini, it's been the core of where we also vibrate as a country, because every artist in Eswatini kind of has this ambition of being played on South African radio. So even with us, when you look at some of the events that we curate, even today, we curate events in Eswatini, we curate events in South Africa, because we still recognize South Africa as a key to the success of most of the Southern African music. I mean, we do a lot of developmental work, but still we do have a business component to it, and Johannesburg becomes that key factor.
Well, how do you think your artists can make money then? You know, because you talked about your pivot to a nonprofit. I'm just trying to think of the sustainability aspect of your venture and how you think that artists can actually live from their musical output.
Sure. So I think just to add to what Sizo is saying, I think it's thinking or looking beyond Joburg. And I think that the internet in and of itself is a critical part of trying to reach that sustainability, reaching other markets, looking at the UK, looking at the US, looking at Latin America, you know, and studying those markets and trying to build connections with those markets so as to find ways to penetrate and collaborate. But I think maybe another important aspect to bring in that I think is a big win for us locally in Eswatini is that so for the longest of time in the past, we didn't have what is called a CMO in other countries, a collective management organization. And this is in essence an organization that collects royalties from users of copyright, in this case from users of music, and pays it back to the artist as royalties. So for the longest time, you had broadcasters using music for free, you had events using music for free, you had stores using music for free. But through the new Copyright and Neighboring Act, there was now a new CMO that was formed in just September 2023. And for me, that now plays a huge role in terms of making it more sustainable, because the reality of it is, yes, the internet is there to be discovered around the world, but you're most likely going to blow up in your hometown or your home country before you blow up in the rest of the world. So while you're chasing your global aspirations, now is a better time for a artist from Eswatini, because while your song is on heavy rotation locally or you're making your way locally, you can now have your royalties paid out to you. And I mean, if you just look at all over the world, that's where the money is. That's where it's been, from the usage of the copyright, not necessarily from the sale of the copyright. And this will fare so well for us locally, not even in Eswatini, but in Africa as a whole, as a lot of these content hubs now come to us. You have Netflix here. You have others coming, Amazon Prime and so forth. There will be a need for them to create content that has African music. And now that makes like the market bigger for African artists to say, if you can get your song featured in one or two, whether it's a series, docu-series, or an actual movie a year, that can be a very good royalty check that can sustain you. So, yeah, those are just some of the ways that I think, if not now, in the next 5 years, we'll start to see more sustainability locally and all over the continent, because we are slowly becoming the content hub of the world.
Well, you say that, and I'm really very much rooting for you. But I have to say, on the issue of intellectual property, I have spoken with so many African musicians over the years, back when I was running Trace all the way to True Africa, you know, hundreds and hundreds of conversations I've had with African musicians. And the big topic is, how do you capture value in this value chain that is digital distribution of music? And it's so difficult to track the usage of your intellectual property. And I'm wondering, this new legislation that you're alluding to from September 2023, how does it truly empower the musicians?
That's a good point. I think it empowers them more from a local point of view. Because before we get to the internet, when I open Swazi Radio, there's music playing. When I go to a supermarket, there's music playing. When I go to a festival, there's music playing. So it's more the physical usage more than the digital usage that I think will have a lot of value for locals. However, you are right about one thing. Intellectual property as a whole is a problem for us as Africa. And it's a problem because I don't think enough is being invested in the education aspect of it. Because the tricky thing about intellectual property, you can only get as much as you understand. If you don't have a good understanding of what your rights are in the copyright and what rights do you hand over when you sign a recording deal and what rights do you forfeit when you do XYZ, that becomes the problem. That's where, for me, a lot of work has to be done. And it's some of the work that we try to do with some of the programs that we do. Just to teach artists the basics, you know, things like split sheets. Make sure when you leave the studio, you guys know who's getting what, and you write it down. Because it means nothing until it means something.
I hear you.
It means nothing as we walk out of the studio until the song blows up and now it's worth $1 million. And here we are fighting. And it's a serious indictment on our local industry. I look at South Africa as well. For the past 3 years, every big song that has come out of South Africa always is tied to a dispute. There's always artists that then come out and say, oh, but I never got to sign anything, or oh, I didn't get anything, or I wasn't credited. So I don't even say it from like an Eswatini perspective, but as Africa, that's some of the things that we need to try and fix, because also how the machine was, or how it was sold to us, the industry is such that it's full of these secrets that artists don't really know. And I think it's Africa's opportunity to rewrite or to create a model that can be more fair to the artist and fair to the record labels as well. You know, I don't think there's a reason to hide anything from each other. Information must be available, but as well to the artists, they should be getting the information, because at the end of the day, when you sign a contract, the obligation is on you to agree, to rather to know what you're agreeing to.
You know what you describe? I've seen it a lot. We've all seen it a lot. And unfortunately, I've also seen it a lot with women. In African music, I don't see women playing such a big role in terms of capturing the value. How, Sizo, do you think that Antidote is empowering women via your work in the music industry?
It's interesting because when we started the NGO, we made sure that one of our policies is whatever program that we run, we need to try to achieve a 50% woman participation. And I mean, it is hard coming from a country that doesn't have enough musicians to begin with. But I'll make an example of the previous program that we just finished running, which is the Vugubone Sound Lab, where we achieved a 40% woman participation in the program. And to us, there was an achievement because there hasn't been many role players within the music space in Eswatini. And this is something that we're trying to encourage, even with the musicians that we work with at the moment. The female musician, the women musicians that we have are taking up A&R positions within Antidote Music, where we kind of show them how to groom artists so that tomorrow they're able to run their own businesses, or they're able to open up the space to more women artists. So these are some of the few things that we try to do in Eswatini. We kind of take a step back, you know.
Yeah, we have to. I mean, it's hard for, I don't think men can be at the forefront of it, in as much as men are the most responsible. I don't think as men it would be right for us to change everything for women. So like Sizo was saying, what we try to do, we try to empower women by mentoring and giving them leadership positions within the record label, to say, okay, handle a bit of A&R, or handle a bit of this, so that, like Sizo was saying, tomorrow we want to see a woman start their own record label and source their own talent, because who better will understand the injustices of women than another woman? So that's just some of the things that we try to do. Another also is with events. With our events that we curate, we always have women on the lineup. And mind you, we it's not even to say that we pick them based on anything else other than their talent. We have a couple of success stories from that, actually. One of the women that we gave an opportunity to last year to play at one of our events, Unleash the Wolf, she played, I think, about two events, and now she's headlining almost every big event in Eswatini, you know? And these are some of the tangible things that we want to see happening. Putting women in that position where they can lead. I think that's what we need to do more than anything, is giving them the opportunity and giving them the resources as well to lead. And I think for me that's the most important thing, and that's what we try to do the most.
On that note, which women artists and which male artists do you think is going to blow up this year, 2024?
Sunnylo.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we have one of our artists, her name is Sunnylo. We will have to start with her, but other than the fact that she's one of our artists, I really think she's incredible. And the beauty with her.
How do you spell Sunnylo? Tell us for our listeners who want to get on Spotify.
Yeah, it's Sarnilo.
Okay.
What's amazing about Sunnylo is just her story as well and her background. So she's half Malawian, half Swazi. So that bicultural background that she has is so amazing in the stories that she has to tell. And as well, just the use of Chichewa, which is a language spoken predominantly in Malawi, and Siswati, which is a language predominantly spoken here in Eswatini. I feel like that would that's really giving her an edge. And last year she released her debut EP, so I definitely would put her up there. But over and above that, I think Africa is blessed with so much talent from all over. And in terms of like a male artist, I'll give it to Imo. Imo also had a couple of big songs just locally in the region, but I think he's going to blow beyond that. It's EMOH, and I'll leave the others to Sizo.
Yeah, I think for me, I'll name two, one woman, one man.
That's good. We like that.
For men, I'll go for Manana.
He's
having a good run at the moment. I've heard that he...
Please spell it, because again, some of our listeners are in America and they're discovering this.
So Manana is M-A-N-A-N-A. And he's Swazi.
Yeah.
He's based in South Africa. And I recently heard that he wrote Chris Brown's new song. Asha's new song. And I think I'm still waiting to hear what he's cooking, because from the flavor of that song, I know he's aiming to go out with his new material. And then I think with women,
I just heard the song. Asha just sent it to me just last week, and I just literally just heard it last week. It's fantastic.
It's amazing. And then for women, I would go for Kampaya. I don't know if you say Kampaya or Kambire, which is K-A-M-P-I-R-E. She's based in Kenya. She's from Kenya. I'm not sure where she's based, because she's been performing all over the world. So I think she's having a good run, and she's about to have like her biggest moment yet. I'm rooting for her.
Yeah, she performed at the Nyege Nyege Festival. Absolutely. Yeah, I think you guys are really just very much on the edge right now. So it's been wonderful speaking to you both. We appreciate the advice. We appreciate the insight, the honesty, And it's been great. Look forward to continuing this conversation and meeting you in June.
Thank you for having us.
You're welcome in Eswatini.
Great interview, great guys, and some amazing artist recommendations to look out for. Please leave a review of the episode and Limitless Africa on Apple, Spotify, or your preferred podcast platform. And share the episode with everyone you know, because that's how we'll grow and get more people to discover Limitless Africa and the amazing Africans we're showcasing. To find out more, visit www.trueafrica.co/limitless or follow True Africa on Facebook and Twitter. Join in the conversation using the hashtag LimitlessAfrica. You've been listening to Limitless. I'm Claude Grunitzky. The Limitless podcast is a production of True Africa. This podcast is made possible with a grant from the U.S. Department of State and the Scenefire Foundation.